Welcome to Healthy Family Connections, the podcast for families wanting out-of-the-box solutions to parenting and relationship challenges, with your host, psychotherapist and author of Ending the Parenting Control Battle, Neil D. Brown.
Raising children and teenagers is hard enough under the best of circumstances. But for those families who are living in different countries, the challenges are that much more extreme. We'll talk about this and more in this week's Healthy Family Connections podcast, The Unique Challenges of Families in Transition. It's sponsored by Neil D. Brown, LCSW, and I'm your host, Neil D. Brown, and I'm here to help you create that enjoyable family you work for every day. And please remember, this is an educational podcast. It's not a substitute for psychotherapy when you need it. In this week's podcast, we're talking with Dr. Mark Burdick. Now, Mark is a licensed clinical psychologist and a licensed educational psychologist. He specializes in evaluations and placements for adolescents and young adults who require greater support in settings such as wilderness programs, residential treatment and recovery programs, as well as boarding schools. And in this, for this podcast, especially would like to welcome our families in global transition. Thank you for being here with us. Welcome, Mark. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you, Neil, for having me here. This is a pleasure.
Okay. And Mark, we should tell our listeners that you and I have been working together for over 20 years. You've been one of my most important and most trusted colleagues for some of my most difficult cases.
Mm. Nice of you to say. I hate to think it's been that long, but without giving the listeners our age, I think we have a sense of maturity and direction in our lives that probably makes it fruitful for the people that we've encouraged along
the
way.
Yeah, no, you and I have been actively perfecting the art of successful placements and reunifications of teenagers and young adults. And I think
it's been a good collaboration. It's definitely been the best.
It has been indeed.
Mark,
tell me, how did you get interested in this particular area of specialization?
Well, it's a kind of a bittersweet story. Growing up as a teenager, I lost a brother in an automobile-related accident and had some counseling with a school psychologist around this particular event. And, you know, I really found some satisfaction in it. I recognized that, you know, there were people that you could trust that could help you work through these difficult times in life as early as I was in the early teens.
Mm-hmm.
And so it became part of my subconscious and finally my present conscious to say, you know, I think I could work within a field that works with kids and young adults to lead them in such a way as to really fulfill their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, I worked as a school psychologist and then into clinical psychology and the school administration. So I've been around it, it's 30-some years now, and I do know placements. Placements was something that I was always very conscious, what the setting was like, what the peers were like, what the teachers were like, what the activities were like. I was really kind of a placement geek, if you will.
Huh.
And other people talk, you know, about, you know, relationships, and I think relationships are ultimately important, and that's, you know, where you've come into play. And it's not just the relationships, it's also the environment. You have to be conscious.
Mm-hmm. So you lived in a lot of different environments in your growing up.
I have. Yeah, and that goes back to that environment thing for me. You know, coming out of the Great Northwest, and my father was taking a position as a result, I think in part because of my brother's passing, we looked at living overseas. We lived in Dubai, back when Dubai was a one-hump camel town.
Wow.
And so, you know, Dubai was not where I wanted to hang my hat. That was a little bit too out there, a little too Bedouin culture and sand dunes. And I was a skier.
Yeah.
And then so I ended up going to high school in Switzerland. The American school in Switzerland is actually where I went to high school.
Mm-hmm.
And today, you know, I'm one of these, what they call a, you know, a TCK kid, you know, where I now an adult. So I've graduated on to living in both the U.S. and abroad. And I find myself comfortable just about anywhere in the world.
Well, that's a wonderful plus. To have that cultural comfort in so many different places. And I think, you know, for many of us, we get a little myopic and we start thinking American culture or the culture wherever we're living. Many of my listeners are in other English-speaking countries. But wherever we're living, that's how life is until you go to a different country, and there it is. You get a whole other perspective on life.
Right.
Yeah.
It's, I just kind of give an example. I had, you know, a particular adolescent, and I think you know which one I'm referring to, that had difficulty in the schools. He was about to be expelled, but he has Asperger's syndrome. And, you know, I thought in my mind, I thought there's a perfect school in London, England, that could work with this young man.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, when he went to that school, he excelled. He brought himself back around. He was socially accepted. And the next thing you know, he graduates with honors and he goes back on to university. It was a win-win for that family.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the special challenges that families that are living in other cultures experience. What are some of those challenges, Mark?
Number one is isolation. You've taken on this exciting life,
uh-huh.
and you think this is going to be fantastic. I get to travel. My kids will get to travel. We'll see so much.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, you don't remember that you've left your supportive environment, the community in which you're coming from. You've left that behind. So you've lost, you know, some of the touch with extended family, with friends. And your kids, you know, they'll hate you for a little while because they're thinking, well, you know, you took me away from my friends.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, you have. You've done that because you wanted a better life for everyone. But there is some fallout, and
uh-huh.
isolation is one of those.
Okay.
And I think from there you kind of go into anxiety and fear and control issues, and there's a lot of things that kind of just got to get all mucked up in that isolation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about for the kids and especially the teenagers? What are some of the special challenges that they face, and how does that impact family life?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, not only took me away from my friends, you've put me into a new environment that has these expectations of me, and I'm not so sure that I could even reach those expectations. I remember in Switzerland thinking to myself, really, I have to go to classes in Italian, and I'm ever going to understand Italian?
Mm.
You know, it's things like that that I just kind of doubted my own ability to meet that requirement.
Mm.
That's a bit of a challenge. And with kids, if they have some exceptional need, if they're learning disabled or they have attention deficit or
mm-hmm.
with speech and language, whatever it happens to be, some counseling need, you're going to have to make sure that they have some resources, because whatever they were able to engineer behind in their other supportive community, they're going to lose and they're going to have to regain that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I also think, Mark, about, you know, the stage of adolescence and kids needing to gain independence. And here they're in a new environment that their parents might not know how that environment is supposed to work. The kids might not know how that environment is supposed to work. So that whole stage of individuation and autonomy for growing autonomy and the responsibilities that go along with it can be very challenging for a family with a teenager to be able to put into play.
It can be. And, of course, the kids have to take their lead from instructors and house parents. These people become their mentors in those in boarding school environments in particular.
Okay.
And oftentimes kids who are living abroad end up in boarding school because where they are living doesn't offer the same educational activities and opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
So that they go to boarding school, then yes, how to become individualized, how to think for yourself, to become a young adult, those become very important issues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As we talk about families living abroad or families living in other countries. I think of families that are living in the United States that have come from other countries, or particularly lower-income families that may have come from poorer countries, as in Mexico or Central America, and in European and Asian countries, Middle Eastern countries that have come to the United States to live, and some of the adjustments that those parents and those kids have to make. It must be very similar.
Huge, huge.
Yeah.
Huge, and working, as you know, we've worked together in ways that we've worked with these families who really are very little, really a little means. They don't have anything but, you know, the backpack, and they pick berries and these type of people. But let's not lose sight also of those who come over from Middle Eastern countries, Asia, certainly Europe and the UK, that come to live in the Google society, in the Redwood City areas, Palo Alto, those people. And believe me, I've seen as much fallout from those kids that have come over, because they're suffering the same way. It's a new place. It's a, mm-hmm. it's a new group of peers, and they don't have it quite wired, you know, to the point that they had it back at home. So mm-hmm. it's challenging academically. It's very challenging to move into some of these areas. So it does. It affects the wealthy as well as the poor.
Yeah. So I'm thinking from my systemic way of my brain works that that the resources in the family, all the individuals and with the family as a whole, go into managing a new environment, and there's fewer resources left for getting their own needs met, emotional needs, interpersonally among the members and within themselves. There's less taking care of self and less taking care of others, and more that goes into taking care of the environment.
Of the environment and just daily living.
The new circumstances and trying to figure it all out.
I guess, you know, because I've done this enough times and I've lived this life,
uh-huh.
you know, I would just encourage people to take a solid inventory before they ever make the decision to, mm-hmm. to move someplace and say, it's likely we're going to need to have, you know, someone to talk to for the family, you know, if it be a therapist, a counselor, a spiritual advisor, you know, somebody who can work with our family to help us keep connected and to reflect upon. You know, as silly as it sounds, certainly a journal is a good place that you can start to reflect, and all family members can participate in journaling. But you also need someone to help kind of case manage this, if you will.
Mm. That is an excellent suggestion. Mark, before we go on to some of the particulars about that, are there other things that families can do to help mitigate some of these challenges of isolation and dislocation? What are some of the behaviors, strategies?
Well, I think some of the strategies is to, well, really get to know, you know, where your kids are, who they're going to be hanging out with, not different than it would be in your hometown. You want to know, you know, who those individuals are, who the adults are, and make that kind of a standard protocol to check in with those people on, say, a monthly basis. And bring a lot of chocolates and bring something, you know, to the table and say, here, I just want to make sure that, you know, if something comes up, you feel that you can talk to me about it. So you can stay connected with community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, finding your community, finding your like kind within your overseas community is important. Of course, there's a lot of books and authors and such around that, how to live, you know, more of less of an idealized and more of a practical life overseas,
mm-hmm.
so that you're not going in with big, you know, rose-colored glasses, and this is all going to be rosy, because it isn't.
Okay.
It's wonderful at the front end, but it gets meaty in the middle.
Yeah. Okay. So it means really building in some new support systems, whether they're support systems that are similar to the environment that you're coming from. Are there other people from your same kind of culture and other support systems.
And to remain open. You know, this is what I go back to in terms of, and I don't want, you know how I feel in terms of the work that we do. I, in certain instances, there's nothing that's more important than to have a therapist that works with the family, because you have to remain open. Things will change. Your family will change. Your perspectives, your attitudes will change. But you need to be open, and it's helpful to have someone there to encourage that process.
You know, under the best of circumstances, raising kids and teenagers is quite challenging. And when you add in new environments, it can be even more so. So you mentioned a case manager and support, and let's talk a little bit about that. Go ahead. Tell me more about that.
Well, I think, you know, typically what I've seen happen, and it's hard to keep these things separated because it kind of all finally floods together. But if one of the spouses has a life that they're encouraged by living it overseas, the other one gets left behind in certain regards. And the obligations, the identities, their roles, they all start to switch around here. So I think case management, you know, typically what happens overseas families is that the women are the ones that are following the men, unfortunately. Not always, and I don't want to offend anybody, because it does work the other way, definitely.
Okay.
But, you know, kind of as a typical, my experience has been, and so, you know, the father is recruited by the company, they get a place, the wife follows behind, and she has to become the case manager for the home and for the community.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so that's great, but what happens there is, who does she turn to?
Uh-huh.
You know, where does she get her needs and such? And, you know, people get busy, and it's not always the best of situations with spouses and marriages overseas. So I think it's important to set out at the beginning someone that you all can check in with, mm-hmm. and all talk about your family issues and how it's going. Somebody who's neutral. You know, maybe you all pick them together, you find one person, and it all works out. But it does take a neutral party. That's important.
Okay. That's sound advice, great advice. And that's something that you do and I do? Who does that?
Definitely. I think it's, well, depending upon what the need is. I'm certainly one that goes out and does the piece of finding the program, mm-hmm. and finding the school that they could go into. And I do that as you know, and doing the assessments and seeing what the needs are and following up with the schools themselves. But I think where we found our uniting value is having you work with the families themselves in providing that liaison as a case manager and making sure that the family is moving forward. But family moving forward is really what we're trying to do here.
Excellent. Excellent. Yes, Mark. And I want to say, you know, it's been a pleasure having that collaboration, because I think we have very shared values about believing in the strength and the importance of families and having when there's special needs and things are out of hand, getting the families the resources they need, but with always the family view in mind. And I think that's what makes our collaboration so important and so successful.
Absolutely. No. We've got many more families out there that need our involvement. You know.
Okay. Well, how can families get in touch with Dr. Burdick, with you?
Well, easy enough. Don't forget Dr. Burdick, www.drburdick.com, drburdick.com.
Okay. And there you'll be, and they can contact you right through your website. Is that correct?
Through the website, yep. Okay. And we do Skype and all that kind of good stuff.
Okay. Well, Mark, it's been a
thanks
pleasure having you on. Many thanks for making the time for us and our listeners. And
the FIGT listeners, thanks for listening in, huh?
Absolutely. Thanks to our families in Global Transition Group who are listening in. And Mark, I hope to have you on again another time. Thanks so much.
Perfect. You bet. Bye-bye, Neil.
So listeners, if you are living in a new country or a new state or area of your country, or if you have a friend or neighbor who's new, let's all be mindful that it is not easy. If it's you in a new environment, get the support you need. If it's a friend or neighbor who's new, have some understanding and empathy for what they're going through and offer your support. It will make a difference. You make a difference. Well, thanks for tuning in today, everyone, and special thanks to Dr. Burdick for the work he does and sharing his experience with us. And a special shout-out to our GFIT listeners. Welcome, and thanks for tuning in. And if you'd like a special guide to managing parental burnout, come on over to my website, neildbrown.com, and download your free Parent Burnout Recovery Guide. And please, take care of yourselves. You need it. You deserve it. You're worth it. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Healthy Family Connections with Neil D. Brown. If you have a question you'd like answered, head over to neildbrown.com/submit and enter your question for Neil there. While you're there, be sure to sign up for his weekly offering. You may want to pick up a copy of Ending the Parenteen Control Battle at your favorite bookstore or online retailer. Join us again for the Healthy Family Connections podcast.